Friday, segment one. Jerry DiIrio is with us. Former Michigan offensive lineman. He's on the screen. Great to see him on this Friday. Jerry, what's shaking? How are you?
Great to be here with you, Denny. Great to be a Michigan Wolverine down here in sunny St. Pete, Florida, at Trade Winds. Just enjoying it. And tell you what, a lot of Michigan apparel around the facility. Lots of Michigan apparel.
Yeah, I was out at the park yesterday, and the people that were walking by had a nice golden retriever. I was looking over at him, and a young man had a hat on, and it said 2024 Michigan National Champs. And I recognized that. I saw it. And that's not the first bit of Michigan National Championship gear that I've seen. So you're even seeing it. Not a surprise. I'm in Washtenaw County, so you know, you expect to run into some Michigan fans here or there, but you're down in Florida and you're seeing Michigan stuff.
It's unbelievable. They're all over the place. They're, you know, it's funny. Michigan travels so well. We were at the Rose Bowl, you know, and there were Michigan people 10, 15 to one versus Alabama shirts. Okay. And then you're down here, I'm down here in Florida. And I mean, Michigan travels so well. It's unbelievable. I mean, we have people all over the world. Not just all over the country, all over the world. In fact, one guy said to me, I was wearing my Mays hat with my big block M, big block blue M on it. And he told me that's the most recognizable college identification ever. And it's just great to be a Michigan Wolverine. It's so I'm so happy and so proud to be a Michigan Wolverine. It's great. People down here are so excited. They're so happy. The Michigan fans, I should say, ran into a couple Ohio State fans. They're holding their head a little bit. But those Michigan fans, they're just out here wearing their apparel, enjoying things, enjoying the heat, and just having a great time.
Yeah, I have heard that over the years. The brand, if you're talking about most recognizable college football brands, Michigan's right up there. If maybe you could say college sports brands, I think it would be one and the same. They're there. They are number one right now. So maybe they are number one in college football. Maybe universally in college sports, the Block M would be the number one brand. That wouldn't surprise me either. So I think you're right on that. That's something that is, that has been talked about over the years.
And hey, Richard, it does have some great beaches down here. St. Pete's is loaded with great sand, Denny, great sand. I mean, white sandy beach. I mean, a little bit off white, but a beautiful, beautiful beaches down here.
Now, wait a second. What, Jerry is doing, he is looking over at the feedback, which oftentimes we will put right up on the screen, and in real time we'll answer it. And he's talking about the beaches down there in southern Florida. You're just north of Lauderdale, right?
I'm on the west side now, Denny. I've moved over to the west side.
Oh, you're
traveling all over the place.
Wait,
I'm in St. Pete. St. Pete is okay. Just south of Clearwater, yeah. Across the bridge from Tampa Bay. Beautiful area down here.
Which one beautiful do you like more? You could pick one would you pick St. Pete or would you pick?
We're kind of looking at some places down here for a second home. And the wife is pretty much dug into the west side. She really likes the west side. Less traffic, and it seems like a lot more Midwestern people on the west side.
West side. All right. So yeah, I'll take your word for that. What you're doing the work. You know what you're talking about. It looks like that. We'll do some work today. Spring practice is rapidly approaching for the Michigan football team. A little bit later this year because of the championship. I'm all right with that. Yep. But practice will be starting soon. Jerry will look, as you know, Jerry is a former Michigan offensive lineman. We will spotlight the Michigan offensive line heading into spring ball. And we started out talking about those signs of Michigan's national championship. And that's where we have begun. Let's look at some of that feedback. Jerry was looking at some of it. Scott is saying that we need to add two more offensive linemen in the transfer portal. What do you make of that statement, Jerry? Do you agree with Scott?
Yo, Scott, we could always use more depth. There's no question about that. We could always use more depth. But I got to be honest with you, Scott. If we were to go into the season right now with this offensive line, I would feel very, very confident, very good about this offensive line. I've been going over it and looking over the depth chart and looking at the names. And frankly, I think there's four names that could have started on any offensive line in the Big Ten last year. Hmm. I think Hinton could have started on any offensive line in the Big Ten last year. Gentry, he could have saw a lot more playing time. Al Hadid, I know this young man is going to be a monster on the offensive line. I think he could have started pretty much anywhere. Crippen was a great center this year for us, a great center, and I think he could have started. So, and then Preeb, he did start at Northwestern. That would be my fifth guy. But I was looking over this roster, and the thing about this offense, they have a lot of experience, Denny. They have a lot of experience. I mean, you look back at last year, these guys were in the games midway through the third quarter and on. Most of them played on special teams, punt team, kickoff return teams. So they have a lot of experience of playing time. A lot of offensive line experience. I mean, if I'm not mistaken, who was it? Was it Al Hadid or I think it was Al Hadid. It might have been Gentry. But one of those two was actually on the 2022 Offensive Lineman Award team. They had so many starts and so much playing time. They were listed on that team. So, it would always be nice to get a couple more. But if we go in with this offensive line, I'm very confident and feeling very good. This group, I went back, watched some of the film. I'm watching them against Nebraska. They were just moving people off the ball in the third and fourth quarter. So this offensive line can, I think it's going to gel just fine. And I think the nice thing about this offensive line, Denny, is there's going to be a lot of competition for those jobs. I see about six or seven offensive linemen that are going to compete for five jobs. And that's always a good thing. And then I really like these two Ohio recruits that are coming in. Roebuck, if I'm not mistaken, he played on St. Ed's. He's out of Youngstown, Ohio, my old neighborhood. Played out of St. Ed's. I believe his profile read something about three state championships in a row. Luke Hamilton. And the funny thing about these offensive linemen, they always put down in their profiles their team was either leading the state or one of the top teams in the state running the football. And that tells you a little bit about our recruiting style and philosophy.
Yeah, I like to hear a rosy outlook for the Michigan offensive line. And I'm not here to tell you that there shouldn't be a rosy outlook. I don't know if I agree with them having a lot of experience. They got some reps, so they're not completely coming in green. And Preeb did start 12 games for Northwestern, and he is slotted in there to be one of the Michigan guards. So you could say he's a returning starter, even though Michigan has to – you'll hear a lot in this offseason, you probably already do, that Michigan has to replace everybody on offense with the exception of Colston Loveland. But, Preeb comes in as a transfer who started 12 games, and Hinton did start five games, I think four at left tackle and one at right, could be the other way around for that. So there are some starts here, and those guys did come in late in the game. But it's different, Jerry, from coming in a 30-point blowout in the fourth quarter to having to put your foot hand down on the ground against Texas week two with your best five. So that's my only thing. And hopefully you're right about that. They all
gel. Well, one other thing, Denny, I'm going to go to is these guys have been playing against some of the best defensive linemen in the country over the last 3 years. day in and day out. So when you see them come into the game in the midway through the third quarter, I'm counting that as experience. I mean, I think they shown all throughout the year this year that when they did get in, when they did get their chance, yeah, they were practicing against the best defensive line in the country over the last 3 years, and they're a very good group. They've got some talent.
Yeah, as we talk about them, a little bit of the depth chart. If I had to guess today from left to right, Gentry, Preeb, Crippen, El Hadi, and Hinton, with Gentry and Hinton being the tackles, Preeb and El Hadi being the guards, and then Crippen at center. That could change. That's how it looks heading into spring ball. But Gentry or Percy, both of these guys are skyscrapers when we're talking about them over at left tackle. And Gentry is 6'7". And Percy is 6'8". So you're talking about skyscrapers. These guys, you know, 6'8", 6'7", 6'8", pretty big for a left tackle.
That's a lot of leverage, Denny. That's a lot of body coming at you and a lot of leverage that if they get their pads down, they're going to be able to drive some people off the ball. You know, I'm looking at Gentry. He kind of reminds me of Keegan. When you look at his facial, his face and all that, he looks a little bit like Keegan. So I'm excited about this offense line. You know, Denny, when you're recruiting, you got to have a philosophy. What's your system, so to speak? What's your philosophy going to be as a team? What are you? Who are you on the offense? That's the question you got to answer yourself. And I think Michigan has made that commitment to the run game, and they've recruited the linemen that go with that run game. More athletic, more lean, taller, athletic offense linemen that can move, that can pull, that can get out in front and get off the ball. And, you know, like I said, I watched that Nebraska game. I watched the Michigan State game. I watched the Indiana game. Those guys are coming off the ball, and they get their pads down pretty good. And it's going to be a fun spring to see what group comes out as the starting five. It's going to be a real it's going to be real interesting. I can see a lot of competition, a lot of heated situations this spring.
How about something else that jumps out? Just taking a look. Gentry 6'7", I mentioned, and Percy 6'8". Tristan Bounds, who is also an offensive lineman for Michigan. You'd think that would be somewhere in the rotation there. Bounds is 6'8". So all of these guys, the likelihood of Michigan having a left tackle of 6'7", 6'8". Jerry, when you just think about that frame, What are the positives, and is there a negative? I think about leverage of being 6'8". Maybe you could get knocked off a little bit, but you do have the reach, right? So those are that's to me just as an onlooker, I'm giving you a positive and negative. But what else goes into it when you're thinking about guys that kind of size?
Well, when I played, we had 6'7", 6'8" offensive linemen: Ed Moransky, Bubba Paris, Rich Stringer, and the thing that these guys had that guys like me didn't was that reach advantage. So when you're 6'7", 6'8", and your wingspan is the same, so now all of a sudden the defensive lineman has got to fight through that wingspan to try to grab a hold of a jersey or a shoulder pad to get some pass rush or to get off a block on a run play. So that leverage gives you all that. It gives you that distance that you can keep from the defensive line. Also, when you put that 6'7", 6'8" frame level, when I say level, meaning coming off the ball, if you're standing up, you're going to get beat. That's all there is to it. If you're standing up and you're trying to run the ball, you're going to get beat. That's not what Michigan State preaches, and that's not what they teach. They come off the ball low. That's what they do every day in practice. They hit the sled. I was watching you and Scar, and Scar, you guys were talking about some noise, and Scar said, yeah, that's a sled in the background at that Ohio State practice. You know, Michigan hits that sled. I remember hitting that sled every day. I never remember, Tuesday and Wednesday anyways. two times a week. On our hitting days, we hit the sled. And that sled made us come off the ball low. And that's what Michigan offensive linemen do. When you're 6'7 and 6'8 and you're coming off the ball low, that's a lot of leverage, a lot of force that you're going to explode on the defensive lineman. So if they can control that height and keep that height and a good pad level, they're going to have some explosive blocks this year with that that frame.
You know, I like something that you said earlier, that these offensive linemen, the experience that they got late in the game, but you also mentioned being able to go against the Michigan defense for the last couple of years. Michigan had the number one scoring defense, and this was always something that I looked at with Michigan, the edge rushers that they had. They can put Josiah Stewart out there, who's 6'1", who's coming to burn off the edge, and then you got Braden McGregor coming to next play. He's 6'6", and then you got Harrell, you got Derek Moore, bigger, Harrell kind of in between there. All of the things that you're looking at, they were able to deal with all of the technique and different shapes and sizes that will be presented to them this year. So that's only a positive, I'm thinking, Jerry.
You know, when you're going against the best defensive line, you're only going to improve or you're going to leave. Especially in today's college football world, you're going to improve and you're going to compete, or you're going to look for somewhere else to go and play somewhere else. These guys, they've been going against the best. I mean, like I keep going back to this one practice, Denny, that I got to see last year right before the season. You know, I saw Graham in JJ's face, and it hurt JJ in that practice. Now, our guys have seen that for 2 years, and again, they're going to be working against it this spring. So they're only going to – they got to get better. They're going to get better just because of who they're going against every day.
I like it. I don't know if you saw this from the combine, but it was nice for Michigan for sure, and that was Daniel Jeremiah, who is a works for NFL.com. He was interviewing Sherrone Moore, and he said that he was talking with an offensive line coach at the combine, and that coach told Jeremiah that the Michigan guys are 2 years ahead of everybody in terms of knowledge, understanding, and maturity. Now, Jerry, that's quite a statement for a broadcaster to make. That, you know, not just that they're ahead, they're way ahead. He says 2 years ahead, knowledge, understanding, and maturity. So the guys, if you're thinking like, and Jerry's talking about, he thinks these guys can get in there and be pretty good. What are you thinking when you see this, when you hear Jeremiah say that what Michigan has going with their offensive line and their system, they're way ahead of everybody in their knowledge and their understanding and their maturity?
Well, if I'm Sherrone Moore and Jim Harbaugh, I'm very proud of that statement, because that says something about the coaching that those young men have gotten over and received over the last four, five, six, seven years. That is one heck of a statement. And when you look at, you know, Michigan, you know, I know Scar always talks about Michigan means defense, and Mo used to put that up on the board. Well, I got one other thing. ULM, University of Offensive Lineman U. University of Michigan has been an offensive lineman production machine every year, with maybe the exception of the slimness of the 20 teens. And even then, we had Lewan as one of the top offensive linemen in the NFL. I think Michigan goes out. This is historic. Michigan knows how to recruit offensive linemen. They know what to look for in their offensive linemen. They look for the footwork. They look for the leverage. They look for the hand placement and the size of these kids and the speed of these kids. And then they bring them in, and they're coached hard. These kids are coached hard. I can tell you firsthand, I was coached hard, and every offensive lineman that I played with was coached hard. And so when they go into the NFL, that's not a surprise. They haven't been pampered. They haven't been coddled. And when they go into the NFL and they're trying out with the pros, they already have an understanding of what it means to be that good and a hard coach at that position. They know what it's like, and they compete every day with some of the best defensive linemen in the country, especially recently. And you know, if I'm Sherrone Moore and I'm Jim Harbaugh, that's one heck of a feather in my cap.
Yeah, and Jerry, as I listen to you talk, I think about, you know, people say, well, what really was important in this Michigan turnaround, I should say, in these last 3 years that culminated with the national championship last year? And there's a lot of things to point to. They hired a lot of former Michigan coaches that came in on that 2021 staff. They changed the defense to a 3-4, and they decided that they were going to smash. They were going to run the ball. And as I think about offensive linemen, when you are a team, I don't know if you're a team like Ohio State, if you're a team that likes to throw the ball a lot, and we associate that with the Big 12 over the years, these offensive linemen, it's more of a passive blocking. They're backpedaling. They're trying to keep, you know, the defense off their quarterback. Meanwhile, when you're running the ball and that is your identity, you're firing off the ball, you're the aggressor, and you're coming at, you're doing the punching, you're on the high ground. I think that's been a big effect, and that was a big factor, I should say, in Michigan and in doing what they've been able to do, certainly against Ohio State, getting to the college football playoff and then winning the national championship. And this is something that they're going to continue with Sherrone Moore, who was the offensive line coach, and you know, they've watched it pay off on the field, and they've got a whole new crop of offensive linemen coming in. They brought five true freshmen that we haven't even talked about. You mentioned a couple of them, but the system that they have here, this isn't going anywhere.
Danny, I'm going to dovetail on your point with two points here. Number one, we're recruiting that offensive lineman. It seems like he's a run blocker. He's going to come off the ball. He's low. He's going to come off the ball hard. And what does that do? Well, that is a pro game. I mean, everybody talks about the passing game in the pros, but when you look at it, teams are setting up everything, running the football. That's what the NFL, that's what football is all about. It's always been and always will be. The teams that run the ball and the teams that stop the run win, period. End of story. We're recruiting those guys that are coming off the ball. They're run blockers. Now, with that said, the second point is, when you run the ball, your defense has got to sit a little bit more. They're not going to come up because they can get trapped. They can get pulled on, whatever. They block back or whatever. So they've got to play along the line of scrimmage. I think I showed a film of Alabama, how when the guard pulled, the defensive tackle attacked the center on the play. So they're playing more laterally along the line of scrimmage, which then, to point two, is helping your pass blocking. Because if a lineman is playing east and west on a line of scrimmage, trying to protect his gap against the run game, he's not getting upfield on the pass game. And so now, all of a sudden, a great run blocker with a less than great pass blocker can be effective in the pass game as well. Because now that defensive line is definitely playing a different type of style. They're not getting upfield. They're trying to play along the line of scrimmage pretty much.
Jerry, with the possibility of Alex Orji being the starting quarterback, Michigan's going to run the ball a little bit more if it's Orji. I think we can all agree on that. If he would be in, you know, that's a real strength of his. We've seen him already come in. The question would be, how much more would they be running the ball? You know, a coach is always talking about balance and 50-50 and everything, but here's FK talking about 60% run if it's Orji back there. And you got Mullings and Edwards in the backfield, and then he's pushing it up to 70%. How much can they really run the ball?
Well, I mean, if Orji is the guy, I mean, he's beating out Tuttle. He's beating out Denigal. Yeah, I could see us going 65, 70, even 75% run, because now all of a sudden you're putting the quarterback in a position to run the ball. You know, you're going to see Orji on that counter jet sweep that we saw all last year with him pulling on the counter or maybe giving with the jet sweep. You're going to see that quarterback power that he ran against Michigan State. You're going to see that more. You're going to see that wedge block for the quarterback instead of just the inside zone that we saw all last year. So, yeah, I can see if Orchie's the guy, if he's the guy, yeah, I could see us being a 70-75% run team. Absolutely.
Yeah, and it could be a situation where if it's – one of the others, let's just say if it's Denigal, knowing that they had an Orji package with J.J. McCarthy, a first-round pick, and they were still putting Orji when healthy out there in their biggest games against Ohio State. However, that Orji's still going to have a role, short yardage, goal line. You could see the number 10 out there.
So, I don't see Orji winning the job all the way. I do see Orji getting about 20-25% of the reps. And I think at that 20-25% of the reps, you're going to see passes that could be wide open because defenses are going to have to come up and stop the run. So it's a twofold thing here. I think Orji getting in the game 20-25% of the time is another running back in the backfield, maybe a two or three set running back situation. And it also is going to open up some pass routes that could be wide open, especially in tight formations.
So we went over what the offensive line might look like heading into spring, at least the first string. And the thing we talked about, the left tackle, these guys go 6'7", 6'8", 6'8", through the three deep. Josh Preeb had 12 starts. I'm penciling him in over there at guard. Then you're going to have a redshirt freshman behind him. You've already mentioned center. You're high. You showed some film on Crippen, and you liked his athleticism and what he could do. Harbaugh talked in glowing terms about both Crippen and Anderson last year. And so these guys are just ready. That not a lot of game experience, but some talent here when you're thinking about the center position for Michigan.
Yeah, you know, Anderson – I think he could put some pressure on Crippen. He's got some a little bit of playing experience in that offense line in key situations too. So, you know, Anderson's gonna be fighting for that job. I mean, a highly recruited kid coming out of high school, he's gonna be going after that job.
Yep,
and I like Crippen.
Gio Elhadi, the big surprise to me last year was that when you did have Zach Zinter get hurt, I thought, well, okay, Elhadi, he's as, you know, if it wasn't for these two guards that are going to be playing in the NFL, Elhadi would be a starter on most teams in college football. But they put Carson Barnhart inside, and obviously it really worked out. Trente Jones played well at right tackle. Barnhart did the job at guard. But Elhadi is one of those guys that Michigan fans are familiar with. And it seems just like he was biding his time. Somebody already mentioned Amir Herring as a rising star that you hear a lot of good things about from the practice field. And, you know, so if I'm a Michigan fan, I do feel pretty good about right guard.
Yeah, absolutely. Like you said, Denny, Giovanni would have started on 95% of the teams in the country. No question in my mind. This kid is good. He comes highly recruited out of Sterling Heights, I believe it was. This kid is he's good. He's a good ball player, big kid. I saw him in person a few times there. And you know he's coming in hungry. He's going to come in with an attitude. He wants his job once and for all. And he's gonna step it up. I got a good feeling about this young man.
And right tackle, you've got Miles Hinton, Connor Jones, Andrew Sprague, who's a true freshman. I put him down there. Connor Jones goes 6'6", and Miles Hinton, who people are familiar with, Hinton 6'6", 340. And Jerry, I've seen a lot of football players in person. covering the Lions for close to 14 years and going to their practices, I've never seen physically a more impressive football player than Miles Hinton. He really, people say, well, he looks like he's had softballs, you know, under, he looked like he had bowling balls under his shirt. And this guy is ripped at 340, putting that together. It's one of the things people just say about him when they see Miles Hinton. They're like, this guy's the most impressive physique that, you know, I've ever seen. And he's played a little bit and, you know, he's got those starts and he's got the guys pushing him behind him. How do you feel about right tackle?
Well, I tell you one thing about Miles Hinton that I would like for him to really concentrate and work on this spring. I think he takes bigger steps than he needs to. I think he's got to shorten up his step work, his footwork. I've seen him a couple times in games, and when he has had problems, it's because I think his step process, his footwork, it's not that 6-inch step. It's more that 12, 18, and a big overstep, which means your second foot isn't in the ground that quick. And it also puts you a little bit off balance. So I would like to see Hinton work on that. If he gets that footwork down, he's going to be a load at that tackle position. And I feel real good. If he gets that footwork down, I feel real good about Hinton at tackle. I think he could be real solid.
If there was a guy that would move inside those other guys, I don't know about a 6'8", anybody moving into guard if needed, but just when you mentioned Hinton, and I just think about, you know, he reminded me of maybe a Larry Allen who used to play for the Cowboys kind of size.
Right.
And sometimes I think about guys like that moving inside. I don't know about Hinton. I just said that. Why do they kick guys inside? Is it because of the footwork that, like, you're mentioning? That could be one of the things, just handling those speed rushers?
Yeah, absolutely. And plus the fact, if you got a bigger tackle, it's a lot harder for that edge guy to get around it. So if that's the best athlete, he's going to move inside. Antoine, I got to agree with you there. People got we got to remember Miles wasn't here for most of his career. He just got here last year. So this spring is going to be very important for him. And if he takes advantage of it and works hard, I think he's going to be a phenomenal football player, a phenomenal tackle for us. He is a big young man and a great background. His dad played against me at Northwestern. So he goes, you know, I remember his dad, and his dad was a phenomenal football player. Went into the, I think he played with the Colts for a number of years. So, no, he's got some good background. I think Hinton could be a real – he gets one good year of coaching from the University of Michigan. He's going to be a heck of a football player.
Jerry, we've got some breaking news that we want to get to. And before we do that, I just want to tell everyone what's going on over on the Maize and Blue Review. And what's going on is that we are talking about Michigan all day, all night. We're looking at what Michigan is targeting and what they're planning on doing in recruiting in 2025 and beyond. Also looking to spring football, as Jerry and I are talking about right now. And, of course, the transfer portal is involved in that. If you like Michigan hockey, Michigan women's basketball, I would say men's basketball, that's up in the air right now. I'm going to wait and see what happens. But, you know, all of that is being talked about. Let's see over on the Maize and Blue Review today by going to Michigan.rivals.com. And for that breaking news, we go to this tweet from Ross Dellinger, who says that college football, the playoffs, is headed for a new revenue model that draws a formal line between the Power Two and the other two, with an annual $300 million gap, according to Yahoo Sports. Pretty big number. Dellinger says the negotiations continue, a deadline looms, and industry is on edge. That's an opinion from him. Would the Power Two really leave if we say no? He's putting that quote in there. What we're talking about, Jerry, when it comes to the Power Two, it's the Big Ten and the SEC, the other two, the Big 12 and the ACC. Huge gap there. What do you think about the SEC and the Big Ten leveraging the other two and saying, hey, we don't need you to. This is we're running the show here. What are your thoughts initially when you see something like this?
I think we need to step back a second. That's a heck of a move right there. When you leave out the ACC and the Big 12 and some of these other teams, I don't see that as a good thing. You know, I'm all for revenue sharing. I'm all for our players getting paid. I think we just have to step back and see what is the best way. You know, my son came up with, he wrote a little essay kind of thing about what's going on with the NIL and the transfer portal and the number of teams. And he came up with a really neat, and what I thought was a kind of a neat idea, kind of having two different leagues. You know, you had that Sweet 64, you know, which would include the ACC, which would include the Big 12, the Big 10, and the SEC. And then you have the other 64, which would be kind of like the MAC teams and some of those other conferences amid the conference down south. Some of these other conferences, they would get together and make the other 64. And I think there's some merit to that. If you got 264 splits, you get the 128. I think everybody's happy. I think they're competing with the same type of teams that they are. I don't like this the talk of excluding the ACC and the Big 12. I just think that is that's a kind of a dangerous thing that you're really kind of hurting some really good schools out there. I mean, remember a couple of years ago, Clemson was fighting for national titles every year.
Yeah. We don't know is just what the formal line could just be talking about the finances. It also could be talking about automatic bids where it could be the SEC and Big Ten say, look, we want to get our top two or three in there. We're not sure you're getting an automatic bid. You know, we don't know what that's going to be about. I like that there's constant discussion and the openness to look at different models and the revenue sharing and everything that's going on here. It used to be college football was just stuck. You could never get anything done about playoffs, player empowerment, and everything else. Now, you know, we got a 12-teamer, and everybody's going, well, what about a 14-teamer? What about a 16-teamer? Now they're acting like they're going to put it in the following year. So some of this, the NIL needs to be sorted out. I think the thing that I wonder about it, Jerry, is that if there's money, college football, if they get it right, and it's, you know, because of the interest with the fan bases, the alums, you know, it could close football is such an number one America's game, an addiction for all of us. And people always say this about the NFL and college could close that gap a little bit with the NFL. I just wonder, there's a lot of people that say that they like college sports, Olympic sports, and it's really what, you know, college is all about. We do know that college football subsidizes the majority of Olympic sports, if not all sports, because of the TV contracts and everything that's going on there. I do wonder if they separate and they start giving $100 million to the players, are they still going to be able to subsidize swimming? And or are we thinking that these could go to the way – could these be club sports? And then football, they're taking the money and they're giving it to the players and they're going to get, you know, whatever the cap would be, $100 million or anything else if they separate. But the downside to that is that Olympic sports are not going to be like they used to. I think there would be a lot of people that say, well, the hell with it. Well, you know, who cares about the Michigan women swimming? Let them play a club sport, you know. But there's an awful lot of people that would say, no, they really value, you know, because that's what – you know, that's part of the, you know, the mission statement for a college. I don't know. So I don't know. I think that to me is something that's going to play out over the next couple of years. And I would, if I had to guess, I would be afraid for Olympic sports in college.
Well, here's the deal, Denny. And you know, at least we're talking about it. At least we're talking about compensating the product. The product. And the product is the players on the field and in the courts. So at least we're talking about it. You know, what if they did something? And I'm just spitballing here, just coming off the cuff here real quick, because, again, you just said this broke just recently. But what if the revenue-producing sport, i.e. football, i.e. basketball, what if that, i.e. hockey, what if that revenue-producing sport had those TV rights and had that stadium right, and it said, okay, we're going to give 50% of the revenue to the revenue-producing sport, and then the other 50% we're going to give to the rest of the sports teams. So now you have, let's take a round number, $100 million, say. That's your salary cap. That's what your revenue sharing is all about. You're going to get $100 million a year. Well, let's take 50, give it to the football program. So now you're recruiting, you know, you've got that to recruit with. But now you've got $50 million to go and give women's swimming, men's wrestling, men's baseball. Remember, a lot of these sports, when Title IX took effect, a lot of these sports became club sports in many universities. And I've never felt good about that. And it's not because I don't appreciate Title IX, because I do appreciate Title IX. I look at Caitlin Clark, what she's done for women in basketball. So we want to promote that. We do want to promote that. We want to continue to promote that. But at the same time, we want to give the people that are producing that dollar, their dollar, their money. And so, you know, but at least we're talking about it. That's a good thing. We're at least talking about it. Let's come up with a solution.
The things that we talk about right now, and I hear a lot of people, you know, the collectives, why don't you get out there? I'm not talking about you particularly, but people that are watching this right now, fork over 100 or 1,000 to get this football program some recruiting. It's like, is this really what we're going to draw it on the fans? I know they're going to get it through the TV revenue, and that's basically coming from the fans as well. But that's to me, that has felt like a weird model. The other thing that I think about are these presidents. Are these presidents, if they're going to have a new TV deal and they're going to have an extra $100 million, are they really going to be ready to say, okay, well, you know, forget drawing it from the fans, we're just going to draw this from the TV and we're going to give it to the players? Are the presidents all ready to keep this going? You hand somebody an extra $100 million, are they really going to be thinking about their Olympic sports and the football players, or are they going to be able to handle that? I would worry about that part too.
Well, I think, Denny, you got to. It's almost like a salary cap in the NFL. You got to have that base number. Okay, this is the number. You're not going to go over it. You don't want to go under it. That would be stupid. You want to compete, right? But you can't go over it. And so, you know, you just have you have requirements just like the NFL on what you can give the players and then where it goes from there. Have that base where everybody – NIL, you're never going to be able to police. That is advertisement. I think I've mentioned this many a times on the podcast. I don't think there's any way you can really police NIL. And that's where the problems are going to come from. If you get something like revenue sharing where you can police it, I think you can police it. I think you're going to look at a more fair – more opportunistic situation.
And NCAA last week said they're not looking into any NIL discrepancies with the colleges last week, which basically signaled to me, if it wasn't a free-for-all, then I think what it really did is signal Michigan, like, Michigan, you can't position yourself, or you can position yourself, but if I'm a Michigan fan, when they said we're not going to be looking into anything with the NIL and the schools, to me – you know, Michigan saying, well, we're doing everything above board. To me, that's saying that it was above board now. I don't know how Michigan – we'll see how they do it. Are they ready to get involved in it and all that? I don't know. Jerry, a couple quick hitters for you. Ferris is talking about Tony Battiti being a TV guy, and he does come from that background. He mentioned he doesn't know anything about football, and that's I would obvious. Agree. Yeah, I think we could agree with that. And then he mentions the sign stealing thing, and that's how that blew up. You have any thoughts on a loaded comment there from Ferris, from the commissioner to sign stealing or anything else?
Well, you know, it's funny because I'm down here in Florida. I see a lot of Michigan apparel. I'm talking to my friends with the Michigan apparel, and then other people come up to me, and they're starting to ask me. They're asking me about what happened with all this sign stealing and all this other stuff. And I basically have told them, listen, what Michigan did was legal. What Connor Stallions did was legal, in my opinion. I don't believe Partridge did anything that warranted a termination from the athletic department. I try to explain what happened to Michigan last year. What Petiti did last year was unconscionable. That was a truly a situation where they put people in harm's way. They really did. What they did with Jim Harbaugh and silencing him and putting him on the sideline or off the sideline for those three games without any true investigation, without any real solid evidence, was a total injustice. I'm trying to explain to these people, and they're starting to understand it, because all they heard was Michigan cheated, Michigan stole signs. That's all they know. They have no idea what the rule says. They have no idea what really happened. But Petiti, to me, he should have been fired as soon as Michigan won the Big Ten championship.
Yeah, I always answer that. Like, I thought, I know you said there was nothing wrong. Like, there was a violation of a bylaw. But when I look at what I think that most other college football teams are doing in clear violation of a level one by paying the players, Michigan, you know, looking into gray areas in a bylaw that blew up, I would want them to do it again and again. It was like I was watching Training Day with Denzel Washington, the movie. And Denzel said it twice. It's not what you know. It's what you can prove. That's what he was telling Ethan Hawke out there. And, you know, but I also like him at the end when he was standing out there and he said, I'm putting cases on all of you. And from Michigan, I want them putting cases on everyone out there over the years. You're getting a case. Ohio State's getting a case on them, and they can play their football in Pelican Bay.
Speaking of Ohio, you know, just because you say you violated rules doesn't mean you're exempt from the punishment. A bank robber can't go to the police and say, I committed a bank robbery. Now let me go free. That doesn't work that way. You violated the law, the rule. We teetered on a by rule. They violated a significant rule. They violated a significant rule. Just because you say you did it doesn't mean you're exempt from that punishment. Bull.
There you go, Jerry. A couple of other quick things here. One, you saw the news about Braylon Edwards saving a gentleman at a workout center, and you wanted to say something about that.
You know, Denny, thank you for bringing that up, because there's a couple points that I wanted to do, because I keep forgetting to mention this. I get so intense on Michigan. I love Michigan football. I love my Michigan football. I love my blue. Braylon Edwards saved a old elderly gentleman, and you know, I'm getting up there in age, so I know I'm getting a little fragile, and these 20-25 year old kids, man, I'm gonna have to buckle up again. But you know what Braylon Edwards did was he really think about it. Anything could have happened. Anything could still happen. I mean, the way society is today, anything could happen. And he stepped up like a real man and protected somebody who needed help. And God bless him. I texted Stanley the next day when I heard the situation, and just proud of Braylon for doing that and for being a Michigan man. That's what it means to be a Michigan man. Step up and do things when people aren't looking. And great tribute to Braylon. The other thing I wanted to mention was Craig Rowe, and my deepest condolences to him and his family. I mean, he was a phenomenal football player and a great person, a great Michigan man. And I mean, I remember him and Mike Martin and that defense that got us to the Sugar Bowl, and I think it was 2012. And that was a great team. He was a great, great young man. And my condolences to him and his family, you know, the family. And God bless you. You know, our Michigan prayers are with you.
I'd say this about Craig Rowe. I saw him over at the Children's Hospital one time, and he was standing outside a door of one of the kids. They couldn't go into the room because they were on precautions or whatever. And he was dancing and he was singing. And I just went over there. Jordan Kovacs was there at that time. And I said hi to those guys and thanked them for coming on in. And I looked over and the kids were in there smiling and laughing and teasing Craig. And I thought, man, this guy is he's something else. And what he was giving back to those kids like he did there, I always rooted for him after that. My condolences go to the family of Craig Rowe as well, 33 years old. So I'm with you there, Jerry. Good thoughts on that.
One other thing I wanted to mention, I get so intense sometimes with this, with the podcast that I love doing, but you know, I kept forgetting to mention this. If I'm not mistaken, the first time Sherrone met with the football team as the head football coach was in the weight room. I saw a video where they were showing him being introduced as the head football coach to the Michigan football team in the weight room. And I just thought that was so fitting and right on time, where that's where the work is done. That's where the development has come from, the weight room. And for Sherrone Moore and his first meeting with the team, I think that says a lot. And that's where Michigan, where the rubber meets the road with Michigan football, in the weight room.
Great spot to conclude this podcast, in the weight room, Michigan.
In the weight room.
Jerry, great job. Always look forward to Fridays when you come on here and, you know, tell us how nice the weather is down there in Florida, but then impart wisdom on all of us heading into spring ball. Great job today. Thanks for joining us.
Same to you, Denny. I always love working with you. I always love the fans out there. I love this. I love doing this. Hail to the victors.
Smash that like button. We'll talk with you next week.